Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Baba Kama's Mem Zion. Thank Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf as long as Zechon Nishmat Liba Gabriela Bashmol. We find ourselves on Mem Vav Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud, and right after the Gemara gave us the fundamental rule of Hamotzi Mechavel Avraya, we're starting today with the words Amar Shmuel Bar Nachmeni. It's a little bit less than halfway down on the Amud. It's about a third of the way down. On Mem Vav Amud Beis. Yesterday we started. We had the good fortune of starting the fifth parak of Baba Kama. We are almost at the midway point of the Masechta. The Masechta Baba Kama is 10 prakim. So once we finish the fifth parak, we will be done with the first half of the Masechta. Although the sixth parak really topically, thematically, is still connected with the first half. So really the Masechta changes themes and topics when we get to the seventh parak. So really the seventh parak will mark the thematic change of the Masechta, but anyway, we started yesterday the fifth parak of the Masechta, and in the beginning of the fifth parak, so we talked about Mamana Muta Basafik. We have a question of whether or not I owe you money. So the way we answer that question always throughout Halacha is, if you're trying to extract money from me, and you don't have definitive proof that I owe you the money, so then I have no obligation to pay you. Okay, that's the, or to put it in succinct terms of the Gemara yesterday, Hamotzi Mechaver Al Avaraya. You want to take money out of me, you need a proof. And it cannot be just simply a claim that you have against me. And we're going to go even one step further, like we saw in yesterday's Gemara. Let's say that the claim you make against me is a Tainas Bari. You make a definitive claim. And I, in response, say, I don't know, maybe, possibly. I don't know. So they, without proof, you cannot extract money from me, even if it's a bari against a shema, even if your taina is a taina's bari in my nitan, and my defense is just simply I don't know, you're still not going to extract money out of me. Again, that's what we said in yesterday's Gemara. Notably, our Mishnah does not conclude like that. Our Mishnah discusses a scenario in which there is money that was sent in it that was. Questionable in terms of who it belongs to. Specifically, our mission dealt with a case where a pregnant cow was either the victim of Nezik or the assailant. Either one of those cases. So let's start off with the first case we saw in yesterday's Mishnah. Let's say the pregnant cow was a victim. So that means that my ox gored a pregnant cow and damage was done, and at the scene of the crime, we saw an aborted fetus. We do not know whether the aborted fetus aborted prior to the Nezek or after the Nezek. So we don't know now whether to include it as part of the Nezek payment. So the Nezek assessment. So what do we say? So the Mishnah said yesterday, okay, well, you split the cost. Meaning the Mishnah said, we don't know. And so therefore, take whatever assessed value is of the fetus and split it. To which the Gemara pointed out yesterday, and this is what we concluded yesterday, good. Our Mishnah is the opinion of Simchas. Simchas is of the opinion, Mamana Muta Basafek Yachloku, that if I have money that's in a state of doubt, so you divide the money. But we don't subscribe to that viewpoint. We subscribe to the viewpoint of the Chachamim, which is Hamotzi Mechaver Al Avraya. Yes, it's interesting that the Stam Mishnah, the Mishnah over here is presented, is following the opinion of Simchas. Rav Yehuda Nasi did that towards what purpose? Okay, that in of itself is an interesting point, but that was the Gemara's conclusion. The other case that we saw together in the Mishnah, which we're going to come back to a little bit later this morning, I might as well just review it right now, is talking about a case where the part of the pregnant cow was the assailant and the ox was the victim. And so now, again, same basic story, where the pregnant cow now attacked an animal, and the pregnant cow was a tom, had no historical record of doing damages. And then, at the scene of the crime, there was the attacking pregnant cow, there was the victimized ox, and there was an aborted fetus. And once again, we don't know when the abortion took place. What did the animal abort before or after the Nezek? Now, here it becomes important to know that, because we know that when you have a tom doing damage, where is the money coming from? Where's the source of revenue to pay for that damage? From the animal itself. And so we have to know the question, whether or not the fetus was part of the animal when it did the attack, or was it disconnected before the attack occurred? And so therefore, can the fetus become part of the source of the revenue? That was the question that we asked in the Mishnah, and again the Mishnah said it's a suffix and we're going to divide. And again, the Gemara pointed out, yes, that's Simchus's opinion. We don't subscribe to Simchus. Hamotzi mechaveir al avraya. Okay, and yesterday in yesterday's shir, in yesterday's daf, we went over that this is not just a rule; it's a big rule. It's a klal gadol. And we talked yesterday in terms of how overarching is this rule of hamotzi mechaveir al avraya. And we concluded yesterday in the Gemara that even against a rove, even if I have some sort of statistical majority that would indicate otherwise, still hamotzi mechaveir al avraya. So, or to put it in terms of the Gemara used yesterday, ein hochim b'mamon acharov. That rove is a tremendous concept that applies to throughout halacha, but not when it comes to mamonos. When it comes to mamonos, the chazaka of me having my money is more powerful than even a rove. That would indicate that the money shouldn't be by me, but rather the money should be by you. Okay. And yesterday the Gemara gave specific examples. Go back to yesterday's daf to review it. But anyway, that just gave a quick sketch of what we've been discussing. And now let's continue in the Gemara. When the Gemara with the words Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Aminan Lamotzi Mechaveir Laveraya. So the Gemara right now seeks a source for this principle of Hamotzi Mechaveir. Shenamar. So the Gemara says it's based on the pasuk found in the end of Parshas Mishpatim. Here it is. Okay, yeah. So the pasuk found at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, V'elzekenim amar shvulan b'zeh ad asher nashuv aleichem v'hinei aron v'chorim achem mi bal dvarim yigasei aleichem. So this is where they basically set up some sort of basin system, and he says that anyone who is a bal dvarim, anyone who has any type of claim, yigash aleichem, should present it to you. So the Gemara says, yigash aleichem, back to the Gemara, mi bal dvarim yigash aleichem, yigash raya aleichem. In other words, if you have a case, you need to bring proof. And if you don't bring proof, so then you can't collect money. And this is the principle. This is where we learn in the Torah. Hamotz mechaver al avraya. So maskal la ravashi halam likra svaruhu. So the Gemara says, now that's funny. We need a pasuk to teach us this principle. Hamotz mechaver al avraya. The Gemara says, we don't need a pasuk. It is what is called the svara. It's simple logic. And the Gemara articulates a logical point. Dekayiv lekiiva azalabe asya. That if you have a pain, so you're going to get particular medicine. Now, what exactly does the Gemara mean by that? In terms of the svara, basically, if you have an ailment and you want to be treated, it needs proper diagnosis. If you cannot properly diagnose the ailment that you have, so then you don't know what medicine to take. If I feel like you owe me money, so the fact that you owe me money needs proper diagnosis. Meaning I cannot make a claim out of you unless I know definitively that the money really belongs to me. Okay, so the Gemara says basically, I don't need a pasuk to teach me this halacha. It is interesting. The Gemara does this on a couple of occasions where the Gemara basically says, psukim, nah, we just apply simple common sense argument. So the Gemara says, elakra lichad Rav Nachman. As far as the pasuk that we just quoted, it's coming to teach us a different point altogether, and that is Amarava Baravua, Amarav Nachman, Amarava Baravua, Minayin she'ein nizkakin elalotovei tchila. The Gemara says, how do we know the following? We have litigants, what we call a Toveh and a Nitva. Now in a Toveh and Nitva, so who goes first? So grammar will tell us who goes first. The Toveh goes first. Toveh means I have a claim against you. Nitva means you're basically the defendant. Now sometimes as part of your defense, you come up with a counterclaim. Right? That's sometimes a good defense is an offense. You think I owe you this? Well, let me tell you something about you. And so you go on a counterclaim. So we have what's called a Toveh and we have a Nitva. Now when Beis Din tries to untangle what now could become a mess, who does Beis Din deal with first? So the answer is going to be, first Beis Din is going to deal with the Toveh, then Beis Din is going to deal with the Nitva. Meaning, now that you have a claim and now you have a counterclaim, so Beis Din takes it in the order that was presented in front of them. And the Gemara says, now where do I know that from? Meaning that's the halacha that's going to be extracted from the pasuk. Shenamar mi bal dvarim yigash aleihem. Yigash dvarav aleihem. So in other words, the one who presented it first to Beis Din, he's the one that Beis Din is first going to deal with. And then as far as the counterclaim is concerned, Beis Din will deal with that as well. But in order. that it was presented to Beis Din. Aminahar Daipa Mimshin is Kakin, Linit Batchila. Now sometimes Beis Din will deal with the Nitba first, meaning this is a rule, but it's not a hard and fast rule. It is not something without exception, like many rules. Right, the Gemara says elsewhere, every rule has got an exception. Even when it says here's the exception, there are exceptions to that as well. So the Gemara says over here there's an exception, and that's the following: Hechidami dekazili nichsei, where his property is devaluating or depreciating. You take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi is a little more specific in terms of what exactly would be a scenario in which you have a toveya claim, a nitba counterclaim, and Beis Din will first take up the counterclaim before the claim. So Rashi says, "Dekazil nechse sheish kan tigrin sheiknuhu bedamim yikarim umacha yechulahem." So let's say Rashi says that right now you have a selling opportunity, a significant selling opportunity, where tomorrow you're not going to have that opportunity. Inami shekarka asav zelos ayidei tviyazu shemino so dachuk. Or let's say people see that right now you're being sued against. And now people see that you have a distressed property, and being that you now have a distressed property, people will make ridiculous offers at you because now you have a distressed property. So v'im yotzio lo tefisa so o mashkano yim karim v'shem le'mehem. And so now basically people are going to exploit your situation, your current situation. So under those circumstances, when Beis Din realizes that because of the circumstance that you're currently in right now, people will either, you're going to have a, Rashi gives two examples, either you're going to have a missed opportunity, or people are going to take advantage of your distressed situation. So under those circumstances, Beis Din will first address the nitva, the counterclaim, and then only address the claim. Otherwise, that's the exception, but the rule is we go in order. First we deal with the claim, then we deal with the counterclaim. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the discussion of the Gemara regarding the basic rule of Hamotzi Mechaveru Lavaraya. And now we turn back to our Mishnah and we speak specifically about the case in our Mishnah. The case of the Mishnah, which is a little bit unclear, is where you have the pregnant cow not being the victim. That case is very clear. But the case where the pregnant cow was the assailant. Okay, remember, in our Mishnah, the Mishnah dealt with two scenarios. The second scenario is that your pregnant cow is an assailant. Now, the Mishnah says, here's the story. If your pregnant cow is the assailant, and it attacks an ox, and it damages the ox, so now, it miscarried, and we do not know when the assailant cow miscarried, before or after the damages. So, again, I'm just going to reread the Mishnah one more time, where the Mishnah says, Parashinachas Ashur, if your pregnant cow gored an ox, V'nimsa v'lada b'tzida, and you see that it had a fetus right alongside it, and you simply don't know when it miscarried, mishtalim chatzi nezek min hapara. So what you do is you pay half damages from the cow, urevia nezek min havlad, and a quarter damages from the fetus. Now those numbers don't work out. Because remember, the animal's a tam. What does that mean? That you are going to only extract half damages from the animal. So now, the Mishnah said, okay, fine. So you'll take the chatzi nezek from the mother, and as far as the fetus is concerned, we don't know if the fetus was in utero or outside of the animal at the time of the nezek. If it was in utero, it was part of the damage, and therefore needs to be part of the revenue source for the payment. If the animal was outside of the animal, so then was not part of the damages. Fine. Here's the part that's not fine. So it's a quarter from the mother. Sorry. Thank you. I also didn't sound right to me. It's a half from the mother and a quarter from the fetus. Well, assuming, and obviously we're going to change the assumption in just a moment, but assuming that both the mother and the fetus are owned by one person, which is generally how things work, so that means now that the owner is going to be paying three quarters of the damage. Well, that doesn't make any sense. In other words, it's a tom. A tom only pays half damages. So just, it's a simple numbers issue. The numbers in the Mishnah don't work out. And the Gemara asks this very question. So let's see the Gemara inside. We are on Mem Vav Amud Beis. We are at the two dots. So the Gemara says, V'chein parsha nachas ashur.
Isn't he still paying half? Just a question of the value of the
tom. He's going to be paying, well, okay, well, obviously we're going to play around with the numbers, but the simple numbers that the Mishnah provides us, it's a half and a quarter. So that's three quarters. So that's what the Gemara is going to be bothered by. So there's another way to look at the numbers of the Mishnah, but I'm just presenting the question as the Mishnah reads very simply. So you have half nezik together with revin and nezik. So palganiskahu debay shlemi. So kuliniska nechi reva mayavidate. So the Gemara asks very simply. So I don't understand. It's a half plus a quarter. So that means now it is one minus a quarter, or what you and I would call three quarters. So and that's more than he needs to pay. The owner of the assailing cow so only needs to pay a half, not a half plus a quarter. And so basically, how did you understand the numbers provided in the Mishnah? So this is the Gemara's question, and here we're going to be giving two answers. First, we'll start off with Abai's answer, and then Rava is going to pick it apart. So first, Abai's answer. Amar Abai chatzi nezek, echad me'arba'a benezek. V'revi'a nezek, echad mishmona benezek. So Abaye says like this. Let's assume now that in terms of the damages that were done, let's assume that there is two owners to the two animals. Now I say two animals, I mean the mother and the fetus. Okay. It is unusual that you're going to have the mother owned by one person and the fetus owned by the other, but let's assume that that's what we're describing over here. So we have now a mother owned by one person and a fetus owned by another person. And so what Abai is now going to be suggesting is the following. Well, maybe, here's the story. The story is that now that you have two owners to the two animals, so basically you now have two people to go after in terms of collecting what's rightfully yours. And so now the owner of the ox is going to say to the owner of the mother, okay, your animal did damage to me. And the owner of the ox is also going to turn to the owner of the fetus and say, and you know, your animal did damage to me as well. Now, each one could say, look, my animal was possibly involved in the damage. Now, I know as well as you that that's difficult to argue on behalf of the mother. The mother wasn't possibly involved in the damages. The mother was definitely involved in the damages. We're going to come back to that obvious point in just a moment. But right now, let's just set it up so that we understand where Abai is coming from. So, or at least attempt to. So the owner of the mother says, yeah, my animal was possibly involved in damages. And the owner of the fetus says, same, my animal was possibly involved in the damages. So you're not going to be collecting for me half damages because I was only a partner in the damages. What you'll collect for me is half of what I should be owing. So half of a half is a quarter. And as far as the owner of the fetus is concerned, well, his contributing amount is, to begin with, only a quarter, because we don't know when his fetus was aborted, before or after. So I'll give you half of that. Half of a quarter is an eighth. This is what Abaye is suggesting as a way to understand the Mishnah, so that each one is only going to be giving half of what they should be paying. So that the total now is not three quarters, the total is significantly less. Right, it's going to be now a quarter plus an eighth. So it's only going to be three eighths. So the and then it comes out that the guy now is getting less than chatzi nezek. Okay, now, perfect. Now the e para vlad dechaninu, so hachinam demasi amrle labal para mimanafshach. Now if the two of them are owned by the same person, meaning if the mother and the fetus are owned by the same person, so then the defendant can say, look, it's one address in terms of who I go to. So chatzi nezek havli. So when the fetus was aborted, it doesn't really matter. In other words, ultimately, your animal did damage to my animal, you're going to be paying chatzi nezek. We're talking about where the mother was owned by one, and the fetus was owned by another person. Now the Gemara says, if the defendant goes directly to the owner of the mother first, so hachinami da amrle labal para, now, immediately, if you're going to go after the owner of the mother, you're in the driver's seat. Because you're going to be saying now to the owner of the mother, look, your animal definitely damaged my animal. That there's no disputing. And now, your only defensive position is going to be, yeah, but there was another owner, meaning somebody else owned the fetus inside, And it's very possible that that was a contributing factor to the damage, because the fetus may have been in utero at the time of the damage. So there may be a second person that you can go to which the owner of the ox is going to say, that's your problem. Meaning, you're going to have to bring proof that that's in fact so. Otherwise, right now, I turn to you for the damages, and I'm collecting from you the half damages. Ella. Dekadim tavle bavla tchila. We're talking about a case where the owner of the ox first goes after the owner of the fetus and basically first takes him to court first. Damarle galita daicha dishutfa isli. And so now, and this part I don't fully understand, but I'll read the Gemara Kipshuto. Once the owner of the fetus has accepted, again, I'm not sure exactly how this works, but once the owner of the fetus has accepted the subpoena, the invitation to court, so basically he's admitting that he's a litigant. And at that point in time now, the owner of the cow says now to the owner of the fetus, all right, you're in this together with me. And so therefore, you're going to be paying a portion of the damages. That is Abaye's explanation of the Mishnah. Ikad Amri Afagav Dikarim Tavila Ba Paratchila Mati Matchila Da Amrle Made Yade Deshut for Isli. And another version of Abaye's answer is that even if the owner, even if the owner of the ox goes first to the owner of the mother, still the owner of the mother can say, look, there may be another person also responsible of the damages, and so don't just come after me. So I'm a Rava. So this is all Abaye's explanation of the Gemara, of the Mishnah. So in other words, let's restate. Question. How can the Mishnah say that half comes from the mother and a quarter comes from the child? So that's a half plus a quarter, that's three quarters. That is one quarter more than is necessary to be paid in total, because you only need to pay Chatzi Nezek. So Abaye's proposed answer of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is dealing with a case where the mother and the owner of the mother and the owner of the fetus are two different people. And when we're saying that they're paying, it means half of what each owes. So half of what the owner of the mother owes is going to be half of a half, which is a quarter. Half of what the owner of the fetus owes is a half of a quarter, which is an eighth.
Is it a small and simple story?
Yeah, in other words, yeah, of course, because we're trying to explain the Mishnah, and the Mishnah has been identified as Simchas. So yes, what they're doing is explaining the Mishnah, which is the position of Simchas. So it's not a Liba de'Ilchasa that they're explaining, but, you know, still, you have to understand the Mishnah. So Amar Rava, so the Gemara says to this, Rava says, Atu Echad Mi'arba Benezek Ve'Echad Mishman Benezek Katani, Chatzi Nezek Ve'Revi'a Nezek Katani. So Rava dismisses Abaye with what seems to be such an easy rejection of Abaye's position, and that is, you're reading way too much in the Mishnah, and not only are you reading too much into the Mishnah, it's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says half of the Nezek, in terms of the owner of the Para. And in terms of the owner of the Vlad, first of all, the Mishnah doesn't even talk about two different owners. But just the numbers itself don't speak to what Abaye is talking about. The Mishnah says half the Nezek of the mother and half the Nezek of the Vlad. I'm sorry, and a quarter Nezek of the Vlad. So by Abaye presenting his answer, he is really adjusting the numbers of the Mishnah, but that's not what the numbers declare in the Mishnah. So Ela Marav Ela Olam Bepara Vlad Dechad. V'hachi Kamrin. So Rava says, okay, the owner of the mother and the owner of the fetus are one and the same person. So there's only one address in terms of who the assailant is. So, the v'hachi kamrinan. Oso lapara mishtalim chatzi nezek mipara. So, and in terms of the pshat, the Mishnah goes like this. If there is enough in the mother, so then you're going to be paying chatzi nezek from the mother. Because, of course. Because the mother clearly was the assailant. And now, leisa lapara. So, let's say, mother's gone. Where did she go? Doesn't matter. Gone. Or if you'd like, we can even, and the Gemara doesn't say this, but we can even entertain the discussion where, let's say the value of the mother doesn't cover the cost of the Chatzi Nezek. So, but if the mother's gone, so now Mishtalim Revi'a Nezek Mi Vlad, so then as a backup source of payment, so now you could turn to the Vlad. But when I say turn to the Vlad, but we don't know. In other words, the Vlad may have been in utero at the time, the Nezek may not have been in utero. So now in terms of going to the Vlad, because we are legitimately doubting whether the vlad was part of the nezek, so you're going to only be able to collect half the damages. Because remember, we're explaining our Mishnah, as Ben pointed out. We're explaining our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is following the opinion of Simchus. So within the opinion of Simchus, if the mother is not a source of revenue because either A, mom's not here, or B, mom is just simply not going to cost enough to cover the damages, so then as a backup we can go to the fetus, but only cover half from the fetus because of the suffix. So this is Rava's response to understanding the Mishnah. So time adalo yadina and ihava vlad bahada kinache lohava lohava ava ipshitalan dahava vlad bahada kinache misham kula chatzinezek mivlad. So the Gemara says, now what if we know for sure that the fetus was in utero at the time? So then the Gemara says, based on Rava's answer, it's a no-brainer. Then, in the event that mom is, for whatever reason, not available to be a source of revenue for the payment, so then the fetus itself can cover the cost of the payment. Rava Tame de Amar Rava. Now Gemara points out that Rava is consistent because Rava says elsewhere, Parish Yizika Gova Mivlada. If I have a cow that does damage, I can use the fetus inside as a source of collection. My Taima Gufa He. Because the fetus inside of the mother is considered part of the mother, and therefore it is a contributing factor to the damage, and therefore can serve as a source of revenue to pay for the damages. And now it's going to get even more interesting. Tarnagolish Ezika ain't a gova mi beit sasa. But let's say I have a chicken that slams its way into another animal and does damage. And now, chicken's a tom, let's assume, and now we're looking to collect from the chicken itself. So can I open the chicken up and use the eggs in the chicken as part of the source of the payment? The Gemara says no. My taima, pirsha ba'almahi. Because the eggs inside of a chicken are considered pirsha. Now pirsha, generally speaking, in the Gemara is referred to as, is a term that we use to describe excrement, waste matter. Something that is inside the body but is not part of the body. Right? Excrement is a perfect example because it's inside the body but it's going to be excreted. In fact, the word itself is actually almost like a perfect definition of what pirsha is. It is something that is going to go outside and therefore not considered part and parcel of the body. So you can't collect from the eggs. Now the eggs, interestingly enough, the Gemara says very clearly that the eggs also have this definition of pirsha, meaning it's considered something which is going to exit the body, therefore not part and parcel of the body, therefore cannot be used as a source of revenue to pay the tom damages. Here's where it gets even more interesting.
Complete egg.
Huh?
A completed egg.
Yes, yeah, right. Correct. Right. Yes. Agreed. Here's where it gets really interesting. At this point in time, you would expect the Gemara now to dive into the topic of Uber Yerech Imo, Uber Lav Yerech Imohu. Meaning, we know that throughout the Gemara entertains a very fundamental question. And that is how to view a fetus. Is a fetus A, considered, while obviously in utero, is a fetus considered just simply a limb of the body? Obviously a limb that eventually is going to get detached and leave the body, but while inside is considered a limb of the body, uber yerechimo, or no? Even while the fetus is inside, the host and the fetus are considered two separate entities, known in the Gemara as uber lav yerechimohu. And in halacha, it has a number of ramifications whether or not we consider a limb to be considered part of the body or not part of the body. Now, it's interesting because the Gemara right here, in Baba Kama, Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, says very clearly that in the event that you cannot collect from the mother, if the mother was pregnant and there was a fetus inside, so then a source of collection can come from the fetus inside. So if I were to apply the question of whether Uber Yerechimo or Lav Yerechimohu from our Gemara, it seems pretty clear that Uber Yerechimo. And yet, the Gemara has an opportunity to make this point, and the Gemara does not make this point. Let's turn to the second Tosus on the Amud. Tosus picks it up from where the Gemara leaves it off. My time agufahi mida amarava. I'm sorry, mida amarava. I'm reading in Tosos, second Tosos. Beperkol Eisurim B'Tmura. Uv Sanhedrin Perek and Nisrafin. Vlad Hanirvaz Vanogachas Asar Hi Vlada Nikhov Vihi Vlada Nirvo. Ein Lo Chichdu Bar Yerachimahu Da Hasam Hainu Taimasha Vladatma Nenam Revia. Vihi Vlada Nachu Vnirvo. Okay, so I'll tell you what. I'll skip that first part of Tosfos. It's important. But basically, there's another Gemara that also speaks to this idea. But Tosfos says, but that's not going to be a good proof. Ach mishmaiten yesh lo chiyach. But Tosfos says, but our sugya right here, our sugya is an excellent proof to this question. Dechi leisa laparli shalem mishalem min havlad. Because we just learned together that if I can't collect from the mother, and the mother at the time of the damages was pregnant, I can go ahead and collect from the fetus. V'im lav yerech imo. Now, if you view the mother and the fetus as two separate entities, lama mishtale mivlad, chelko v'chelek hapara. So, there's no way that I would be able to collect from the fetus for both the damage that the fetus did and the damage that the mother did. Meaning, if mother and fetus are two separate entities, of course the fetus is a contributing factor to the damage, because damage is force, and force is mass times acceleration. But force is mass. And obviously if the fetus was there, the fetus is certainly a contributing factor. But if they're viewed as two separate entities, so basically mom and fetus inside are a tag team. And in terms of a tag team, so Tosfos points out, Atu shnei shvarim tamim sheiziku im nevad echad mehem mihava mishalem chelko v'chel chavero. If let's say you have two animals doing damages, okay, so and they were both, let's just for the sake of argument say they were equal contributing forces to the damage, I can't go to one animal to collect his part of the damage and the other animal's part of the damage. I can only go to each animal for its respective portion of the damage. If mom and fetus are two separate entities, so then it would be analogous, says Tosfos, to two animals doing damage, and at best I can only take from the fetus its contributing force to the damage. The fact that our Gemara allows us to take from the fetus the entire damage is clear proof, says Tosfos, that the fetus is considered a limb of the animal. Okay. And then Tosfos goes on, but just as from Tosfos' standpoint, the Gemara that speaks very clearly, although admittedly the Gemara itself doesn't realize the conclusion, but Tosfos says once you learn this Gemara, it seems pretty clear that the correct conclusion is ubar yerachimo, that the way to view a fetus is that it is considered a limb of its mother. Yeah, I understand that, but the Gemara doesn't say the magic words. Meaning, I agree with you, but the Gemara knows of its discussion of Yerachim, Uba Yerachimo, Uba Lav Yerachimo, and the Gemara doesn't say it. Okay, so, okay. But anyway, but Tosfos realizes it. As you can imagine, not all Rishonim agree with Tosfos' conclusion. It does seem to be a sound conclusion. There's obviously more to talk about. We're going to go back to the Gemara. We're going to continue in the Gemara. Amar Rava, Ein Shamin LaPar Bifnei Atzma Ulavlad Bifnei Atzma El Shamin LaVlad Agav Para. So Rava says this as follows. Look, we're obviously going to have to make an assessment of the pregnant animal. And here's what you're not going to do. You're not going to assess an animal and the Vlad. In other words, in terms of appraisal, you assess the animal with the Vlad inside. Meaning its current condition is how you assess it, and you do not assess it independently. Because consider that if you were to assess the damages of mother and fetus separately, obviously that would come out to a larger bill, and the mazik would have to be paying a larger bill. And other examples where the appraisal is not done in separate from one another, but the appraisal is done from a standpoint of looking at the totality. So the two other examples the Gemara gives. One, let's say I was involved in the cutting off of your Eved's hand. Okay, terrible, terrible accident. And now, let's assess the damages. We don't say, this is Rashi's explanation of the Gemara right now, we don't say, well, how much would it cost, how much would you pay to have my Eved's hand cut off? Right, that would be a tremendous amount. We look at the result. The result is, right now your Eved is without a hand. And how much would he fetch on the market versus how much was he fetching on the market when he had both of his hands? So we look at not the process, we look at the result. Same thing is true in terms of a field. If I damage your field, we don't assess it based on the act of damaging, we look at the result. Meaning, how much was the field before the damages? How much is the field now? Meaning, the field is slightly damaged. So, but there's plenty of field that's good. So we look, and when doing an assessment of damages, you look at how much it was, how much it is. And I don't go through the process of the damage itself. So the Gemara says, well, I don't really follow this argument. Meaning, if this is a law, meaning if part of appraisal and assessment is not only looking at the result, but looking at the process, so then maybe assess the damages, including the process of the damage itself. So the Gemara says, "Mishum d'amalei parma abrasa is dakech, parma abrasa shem nelach." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but it's not right. It's simply not right. When we assess damage, we look at what I damaged. Meaning, I damaged a pregnant cow, so we're going to be assessing based on pregnant cow." So in other words, it is right. It is right to assess damages not based on there was a mother and there was a fetus, but there was a mother with a fetus inside. We look at it as it is. Pshita, the Gemara says, it's obvious, par dechad of la dechad, pitma labal para. Okay. Fun discussion coming up now in the Gemara, and that's the following. Look, let's go back to a discussion that we entertained earlier this morning, and that is where the mother and the fetus are owned by two different people. Fine. So, in terms of the owner of the mother, so, obviously, what's his is mom. And as far as the owner of the fetus is concerned, what's his is the fetus. But, there is something what we would call here baby fat. Okay? Meaning that when the mother is pregnant, so the mother is going to have a lot of storage fat that's necessary for the development of the baby. So who is the rightful owner of the baby fat? Essentially is the Gemara's question. So pitma labal para. So the Gemara says it's obvious, okay, that the pitum, that the baby fat, the extra fat that the mother needs in order to take care of its fetus, belongs to the mother. Or in this case, when we say mother, we really mean, we're talking about cows, talking about the owner of the mother. The Gemara says that's obvious, and so if the pregnant animal was damaged, so if there was a damage done to the baby fat, that assessment goes towards the owner of the mother. Nafchamai. Now, what about the volume? Now, I'm not perfectly clear exactly what the Gemara is trying to gauge over here. I understand the words. The words are basically, when the mother is pregnant, so the mother looks larger, meaning just more volume to the mother. And so therefore, on the market, the mother's going to fetch more. So in terms of an assessment of the volume, so who gets to benefit from that? The owner of the mother or the owner of the fetus? Okay. Now, once we've already established that the baby fat belongs to the mother, so there's got to be some differential between the baby fat and the volume of the mother. Now, I don't go to auctions where cows are sold, so I'm just admitting that I don't fully understand this differential, but clearly if the Gemara is discussing it, the Gemara is assuming that there is some sort of differential between the baby fat and the volume. And the Gemara's question now is that this extra amount of extra volume, who is the owner of that? So Rav Papa Amar Labal Para, Rav Acha Brei de Rav Ika Amar Cholkin, Ve'Hilchasa Cholkin. And the Gemara says on this issue, debate. One opinion is that it belongs to the owner of the mother. The other says that this extra volume should be divided. The halacha is that this extra volume should be divided. So after assessing the baby fat, which goes to the owner of the mother, then there's this additional amount, which is volume. And that, the Gemara's conclusion is, that gets divided between the mother and the fetus, if mother and fetus are owned by two different people. We start the next Mishnah, and I mentioned this yesterday. It's a little bit strange, meaning that really what we just discussed was a Mishnah, the first Mishnah, the first discussion in the Gemara, that had to do with Negicha, had to do with an animal goring. And so in terms of organization, it really belongs in the fourth parak of the Masechta. And why there's kind of like one additional sugya of Shor Shenagach, you know, that opened up the fifth parak, not perfectly sure. But In the meantime, however, this next Mishnah really opens up the next topic of the discussion, the Gemara, and we are talking now about damage done while in other people's properties. So, a number of examples in the Mishnah. Let's say I have jugs, I am a jug maker, and without your permission, I take my jugs and I put it on your property. And I do not have your permission in doing so. So, Hagadu Sheikh Mitz Kedir Sal the Chatzar Balabai, Shalob Rishos, and I have no permission in doing so, Vish Shavra Behemto Shabalabayas. And then, after my jugs are improperly placed in your property, your animals do damage to my jugs. So, Potter. So, I had no business putting my jugs on your property. Therefore, any damages to my jugs, the owner of the property is going to be exempt from having to pay me because I had no business putting my jugs over there. And we'll go. And the Mishnah is going to go even one step further. The im huzka behem bal kedar is chayev. Furthermore, if your animals slip on my jug and your animals get damaged, I'm going to have to be responsible for paying for that damage. It would be similar to boar. In other words, if I put a hazard in the Rishus HaRabim and someone gets damaged on the hazards that I laid out in the Rishus HaRabim, I'm going to be liable here too. I improperly place jugs in your property and one of your animals gets damaged based on my jugs that I improperly placed in your property. Not only are they not going to have to pay for the damages of my jugs, but furthermore, I'm going to have to pay for any damages that my jugs have caused to you on your property.
Well, we already know this, Robin. Now, why do we need this Mishnah?
Really? Meaning, we really have not discussed boar as a formal topic yet. Yes, in the course of the Gemara's discussion, we've touched on it, but in terms of Mishnayos, the Mishnayos have not really covered boar. That's what's ahead of us in the fifth parak of the Masechta.
What about the shard of the thing that causes damage? I think it was.
No, that's right. Now, Sraros is talking about where the shard shoots out from the animal.
Regal.
Right, and that's a function of regal. Here we're talking about where my shard.
The animal damages this, and then part of it goes.
Okay, fine. That's even a further extension of this discussion. Right now, let's just get the facts on the ground. Now, what if before I put my jugs on your property, I ask you permission, and you give me permission? So then, now, Baal Chatzar Chayev. You see, by you giving me permission, you have, and I know this is a lot, but you have not only agreed to allowing your property to be used as my, you know, as my storage, but furthermore, you've taken upon yourself that you're going to be the shomer. You're going to be the de facto responsible party for anything that happens to these, to the pottery, to the jugs. And therefore, you're going to be responsible just by giving me permission to put it down in your property. We'll discuss more about that in the Gemara. Hichnas perasav lechatzar balabais. Now, this next case over here is going to be nearly identical. Instead of talking about jugs, we're going to now talk about food, but it's going to be the same discussion. So hichnas perasav lechatzar balabais shalav birshus va'achasam behemto shal balabais pater. So let's say I have food and I put it down on your property and I have no permission to put it down on your property and your animals see my food and your animals get excited and they eat my food. So you're not going to have to pay for the food because I had no permission to put it down on your property. And again, we'll make the same point one more time. If let's say your animals slip on my food that I put down on your property and they hurt themselves, once again, I put food in your property. I have no permission putting in your property. So not only am I not going to get reimbursed for the food that was eaten, but if that food causes damage, I'm going to have to pay for the damage. Now, and again, when the Mishnah makes the same point, once I receive permission to put the food in your property, so then you're going to have to pay me if your animals eat it, and I'm not going to pay for any of the damages that are done. I take my ox and I put it in your property without permission. Finishing up the Mishnah. We're now in the top of Mem Zayin Amud Beis. V'nacho sharo shel balabayis. And let's say, after I put my ox in your property, and I was not given permission to do so, and your ox then damages my ox that I put in your property. V'nachu sharo shel balabais. Oh, shenashchu kabo shel balabais. And the ox attacks the homeowner's ox attacks the homeowner's dog attacks the ox. Putter. Under these circumstances, they're going to be exempt from damages. And again, because I had no permission, I had no business putting my animals in your property. And furthermore, if the ox were to damage the ox of the homeowner, so then he's going to be chayav because he had no permission leaving his ox there. Nafal lebaro vihivish meimav chayav. Let's say the ox that I put in your property, that I was not given permission to put in your property, let's say it falls into a pit of water, and the water now is undrinkable, and so basically caused damage to the water. So I, meaning the owner of the ox, who improperly placed in someone else's property, am now going to have to pay for those damages. Let's say the father, the son was in the pit, died as a result of that. You're going to have to pay kofar. Now, if the ox was placed there with permission, Baal HaChatzer Chayev. So then the owner of the Chatzer is not going to be Chayev because, again, according to the Tanakam of our Mishnah, permission granted immediately means, de facto means, that you are not only allowing me to put things in your property, but you now, the homeowner, are going to be the Shomer. You're going to be the one responsible for protecting the item. Rebbe Omer Bekulon Einu Chayev. Achi Kabal Alav Lishmar. Rebbe says that in every one of these cases, it is not enough to just simply say that permission to put on my property makes me, the homeowner, the de facto shomer. In order to be the de facto shomer, you must accept upon yourself shmira. And if you do not accept upon yourself shmira, so just because I allow you to put it here does not mean I become the shomer. Okay, stay tuned. We're going to be discussing at length where the Tanakhama disagrees with Rebbe, meaning does Tanakhama necessarily argue with that point of Rebbe? We're going to start with tomorrow. We're going to start with the Gemara tomorrow. Again, let's just quickly recap. Today we finished the discussion in the Gemara regarding the principle of Amotzi Mechaver Ola Varaya. We seek the source in the Torah for this principle. The Gemara says it's really a svara, that in order to extract money from somebody, I need proof. Gemara says, in terms of the Pasuk, Pasuk's coming to tell me that, generally speaking, when Beis Din takes a case, first Beis Din addresses the towing, then Beis Din addresses an itan, with the Gemara says an exception to that rule. We then discussed that when the Mishnah gives the example of the pregnant cow being the assailant, half of it comes from the cow, a quarter of it comes from the fetus, how can that possibly be? So the Gemara gives two pshatim, Abai and Rava. Rava's pshat is that we're talking about a case where if you cannot collect from the mother, then you go for the child. The Gemara then has a very interesting discussion regarding if we know that the cow was pregnant at the time of its attacking another animal, we could for sure collect from the fetus in the event that the mother is we can't collect from the mother. That's not true regarding a chicken. You can't collect from the egg. The difference is an egg is considered pirsha and the fetus inside is considered gufa. Tosfos extracts from our Gemara that our Gemara seems to be a very definitive position that ubar yerech imahu. Okay, we saw the Tosfos inside this morning, and then the Gemara had a couple of fun discussions in terms of if, let's say, the mother and the child are owned by two different people, who's the owner of the baby fat? Gemara says owner of the mother. Who's the owner of the extra volume of the animal? Gemara says that gets divided. And finally, we started the next Mishnah on Memzainam and Aleph, going to Memzainam and Beis, and we talked today about if I don't have permission to put my items on other people's property, so I'm going to be fully liable for I'm not going to be reimbursed for damage that's done to it, and I will be liable for damage that it does to the homeowner and the homeowner's property. What if I was given permission? So the Tanakhama seems to say that once permission is granted, so then the homeowner becomes the shomer, and Rebbe says no. The owner only will become a shomer when he accepts upon himself to be the shomer, and tomorrow we'll talk about what the machlokas is between the two.